everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's so much to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has recovered.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Rosa! I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast offering free tickets to the BCS Championship in Glendale, Arizona. Tom, I view this game as a yawner. It was an SEC win, but it was an easily forgettable win, 23-10, not a whole lot of excitement. We had a little bit of bounce after the loss, probably not as much as we would like, but we didn't altogether play poorly. What did you see in this game?
You know, I think there are some improvements that we made. We've learned some things from South Carolina. The game started off really about as well as it could have, setting up from the defense. You know, the defense gave us the ball, gave the offense the ball at midfield on their first three possessions. But yet we were only able to get 10 points out of that. And offensively, we just didn't have the consistency that we wanted. But our defense came out, and their job was to shut down Mazzoli, contain him. You know, he only had 40 yards on the night. We put them in obvious passing situations. We seemed to play the ball more aggressively. Dante Hightower remembered how to run. We had six tackles for loss. We actually had two sacks. And as you and I have talked about, they came from our defensive line. And so our defense came out, and Ole Miss had to punt on their first five possessions. And so the defense kind of really was the player of the game. They handed the ball to the offense. But what was unfortunate is we just didn't put our foot on their throat and put the game away.
Yeah, from a defensive standpoint, I saw it as a tale of two halves. We came out and, you know, as you talk through, we definitely shut them down. I think they were 0-for-8 in their first third down opportunities. But in the second half, I don't know if we let the foot off the throat, but in the second half, they certainly made adjustments, came out and played a lot more. They had a long scoring drive. We just seemed to present differently in the second half defensively.
We did, and it seems like they made better adjustments at halftime. And this is a theme that you and I have noticed now for several weeks, but teams are spreading us out. It seems like early in the game, they came out, they were going to run the option attack. We came out in our base defense. We got to see Nico Johnson a lot in the first half, but we were keeping contained, which we didn't do against South Carolina, and that wasn't working. And so they came out in the second half, and they probably spent the whole second half in empty formation. And we were having to go in the nickel and dime, and we're a little vulnerable. You know, we're vulnerable in that nickel right now.
Yeah, I think so. And at the same time, I'm not altogether disappointed with the defense because, you know, the comment that you made in the post game as we were looking ahead in our last episode, you called Ole Miss a team that's finding themselves. And that's exactly right. They were averaging in their last couple of games, in fact, I think for the season, over 30 points a game. For us to hold them under 10, less than a third of their per game production, I think that's good. I think we really showed some flash. Some of the players that were injured previously seemed to move very well Saturday. I think Mazzoli is a Heisman Trophy winner if he's still at Oregon. He just doesn't have the personnel around him there at Ole Miss. I am not altogether disappointed with the defense.
I'm not disappointed either. Teams are going to put a drive together, especially a team averaging 40 points a game. And so, yeah, they had that one drive where they were in the third quarter, you know, where they were, you know, I think they were five of six, actually, on third down conversions. So that's something I'm sure Saban will harp on in the third quarter. But all in all, when you only allow this team to put one long drive together, that's much better than last week.
Yeah, and I want to hit a point I just talked about and talk about defensive personnel a little bit. Upshaw and Hightower and Marcel are players that have been banged up, and they demonstrated that some. Marcel especially went out a couple of times. I think he has a nagging ankle injury or leg injury that's harping him. But all three of those players moved very, very well. They were making tackles on the sideline. I know we commented a couple times during the game that they've not been able to do that recently. And for them to come out after so many consecutive games and so many times appearing banged up, I was very impressed with the way that they played. At the same time, I do have to wonder, where's that depth? We've recruited, we've had top-ranked recruiting classes. Where is the depth? Where is the Atchison? The Stinson didn't play a whole lot. Chris Bonds, Undra Billingsley.
Darrell Harris.
Where are those guys that can step in and spell some of these injured guys and us not see the drop-off? We're playing guys at 60, 70%. Presumably, there's healthy people that can come in and play at that level.
Well, remember at the beginning of the year, we were talking about Nick Gentry and how much Nick Gentry was seeming to play, and it was allowing Kerry Murphy to be on the outside, and he was going to be that 300-pound, Richard Seymour.
Right.
Well, Gentry's gone away as we've gotten into the meat of the schedule.
Much fewer snaps last night.
And it seems like Kerry Murphy has become Josh Chapman's twin on obvious running downs. He is not, even though we think he has a motor, okay, he's an example of somebody that he's like, okay, Darius at 65, 70% is better out there. I mean, I thought it was interesting that in obvious passing downs, we would see Dante Hightower, Courtney Upshaw, Marcel Darius, and either Centimore or Damian Square. So three of our four rushers, in moments of these games can hardly walk. And so it does make you wonder a little bit.
And Tom, just one last point I want to make on defense before we flip to offense is I wonder if we haven't seen a template for how we're going to play the running quarterbacks. LSU has a running quarterback, certainly Auburn does as well. I think Mississippi State is trying to incorporate some mobility from their quarterback. Playing Mazzoli, we seem to play a lot more dime than I've seen us play all this season. And what was unique is even in what would appear to be third and in mid-range situations, a third and four, I noticed a couple of times, we would bring the dime out. And I wonder if we weren't spying the quarterback and setting a template for how we're going to play some of these running quarterbacks in the future.
Probably so. And, Barron was in a linebacker spot if he was spying the quarterback. And right now it's a defense, though, that I think we're a little vulnerable in. Because, like you said, we are going to be playing a bunch of running quarterbacks the rest of the year. But when they came out and made adjustments and was able to go empty on us, they did have some more success.
Tom, let's flip the field and let's talk about offense. What did you see offensively?
Like we talked about at the beginning, offensively we started out and in our first three possessions we started out at midfield and we could only get 10 points. And special teams and defense today really set up nicely for us. I did like that we came out and ran the ball more. We had a better balance as far as passing and running. I think Alfred McCullough played pretty well in his first start, backing up DJ Fluker.
I noticed to start the game, we flanked McCullough with tight ends, sometimes two tight ends, and we did that most of the first quarter.
And then we
seemed to go away from that, let him get some comfort out there. I thought that was good alignment, that was good coaching to give him some comfort out there before we just throw him out. I think maybe his first start, certainly first start this season, before we just throw him out there on an island that we put some tight end coverage, and then we backed away from that and probably went to more the type of plays and the type of offense we would run had Fluker been in.
Right, and we talked about this. I don't think the offense showed a whole lot. I don't think they felt like they had to. There was no new wrinkles. We also talked about the talent of their defensive line for Ole Miss or their defensive tackles. And we didn't really run at that. I think Vallejos and Barrett Jones and the left guard.
Warmack.
I think they played pretty well. And I think they handled them pretty well. But we seem much more comfortable running outside the tackles.
Yeah, one of the things that Saban does, which I've found interesting, is every team we play, he likes to say they are the best at this and fill in the blank. This is the best team we'll face this year that does this. And with Ole Miss, it was pretty apparent that the best thing that Ole Miss does, or they have the best tandem at defensive tackle. And so their two guys, I think, helped clog the middle. Saban talked about in the post game that's how they've played us the last couple of years, and we've had difficulty moving the ball. So I don't think there's anything necessarily new there, other than that's a strength of their team. And so we did combat some of that, and our running totals were a little low. A couple of things that I saw on offense that I hope we can certainly take away from this game. We've asked you know, where's the slant pattern? Where is that? And we attempted, unfortunately, they dropped, but we were high on Earl Alexander, which that's a thing.
That would have been a big play.
That would have been a big play. And Julio dropped a slant as well, and that would have been a big play. But I hope we see that integrated into the game more often. And then Trent Richardson, he scored a touchdown, the longest play of the game. But that was a little screen to Trent. And that's another element of our game that we haven't seen a lot the last couple of weeks. And so I'm hoping the great success that we had on that play motivates the coaching staff to cycle that into the play calling a little more frequently as we move forward.
I hope so as well. And, you know, to touch on that, you know, we talked about stretching the field at the beginning of the year and being able to be more multiple. Kenny Bell, you know, redshirt freshman, had one nice catch for 18 yards. You know, Earl Alexander, you know, I think his two catches were both in the 15 to 20 yard variety. So to your point, we did try to go down the field more attacking them. It just seems like we were just hit and miss. We just couldn't put it together. And, you know, it'll be great to see this team put together offense, defense, and special teams, because if the offense could have come out the way the defense did in the first half, this game would have been over at halftime.
It would have been over at halftime. Just another little nuance I'll throw this in. We did see another play. It was a wildcat where we had both Trent and Ingram in the game. And we basically ran Mark up the middle on that play. And you and I talked during the game, well, why would we do that? Why would we have both players in if all we're going to do is run Mark right up the middle? And I don't know if I'm giving the coaching staff too much credit or not, but I think having Trent in there as a threat to hand off and run, it moves that middle linebacker just half a step. And on a third and short, a short yarded situation, I think sometimes that's all Mark needs to get that. So I like to see some of that creativity. Or am I giving the coaching staff too much credit?
No, I don't think you are. I think that was a good wrinkle to add into there, and hopefully we see more of Trent and Mark in the backfield together. You know, I'd like to see them both lining up on each side of McElroy in the shotgun, and one flare out one way, one flare. You know, you talked about at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think there's more of that in the playbook, and so hopefully we'll get to see that as the season progresses. Why don't we change gears again, and let's talk about special teams. I actually have a couple of things I want to hit here, but what did you see under special teams?
Special teams was a mixed bag. Marquise Mays is a great example of a mixed bag. You know, he had 125 yards on six punt returns, and Coach Saban likes to talk about if you can put 100 yards together, that's points. And so that was really, you know, he helped out the offense and with those yards. But, you know, he caught a punt at the 10-yard inside the 10-yard line. He should have let it go in the end zone. And then there was another punt that, you know, he fumbled and gave them the ball at the 20. Ole Miss had done nothing in the first half, and he fumbles that punt at the 20-yard line to let them get a field goal. Think, you know, the defense stiffened, but it'd be much nicer if Ole Miss could have, you know, we could have gone into halftime 13-0 instead of 16-3. Now, we did answer that, but from a special team standpoint, you know, Marquise Mays, you know, we weren't used to seeing that with Javi. Javi wasn't fumbling punts.
Yeah, they went into the half with points, whereas otherwise they would not have had those points. And so that's really giving the team free points. You never want to do that. And then you never want to give a team like an Ole Miss, an SEC conference team, you never want to give them the opportunity to feel like they're staying in the game. You want to keep them pushed back. You want to keep them down. You want to change their mind, and by giving them points, that doesn't change their mind.
No, it doesn't. And, you know, to go to another special teams topic for a minute, I think Cade Foster had a good night on his field goals. The kickoffs weren't there. He was kicking the ball to the 10-yard line, and they were returning it to the 35. And so we didn't have the kickoff return coverage the way I would have liked to have had. We let them start at a good field position. But Cade Foster had that 45-yarder and the 49-yarder. You know, I would have liked to have seen Coach Saban let him try the 43-yarder and finish, you know, try to finish 3-for-3. What's your thoughts on him bringing Shelly in on that?
I'm a little indifferent on that. I think that Shelly's probably our more accurate kicker, and I think in an opportunity like that where the game's not on the line, it's an extra 3 points, we want it, but we can do without it. I think that we want to have our more accurate kicker. Let's find out for real in a game situation what his distance is. I know we talked last week, know your players, what they can do. If he could not make that kick in practice, I don't think we'd have him out there in a game situation. you would have known your answer. But if he's been hitting that in practice, then I want to see him hit it in a game situation, under the pressure, under the lights. Let's see what he can do in that setting. That's why I think we put him out there.
So if Cade Foster, though, is your scholarship kicker, who you thought was going to take the job when he came in, you bring him in to kick a 45 and a 49-yarder, why do you bring Shelley in to do a 43-yarder? I guess you're muddying the water there as far as they're getting so close together. You know, I thought one was a
it's a short specialist and a long specialist, and one has a stronger leg and one's more accurate. And so it's muddy water anyways. I think you just want to see what the guy can do. If he is the more accurate kicker, then let's put him out there. And like I say, he's probably been hitting him in practice. And so let's put him out there in a game situation and see if we can hit it. You know, he's proved that he couldn't. So if that situation were to come up with a game on the line, which it may well, then I think we'd see Cade Foster roll back out there. But it's nice to know that.
And it didn't cost you anything.
And it didn't cost us anything.
What do you think about one other special teams topic? What do you think about Trent Richardson feeling like he wants to return every kickoff regardless?
Yeah.
Because, like, in that one situation in the game where the ball was going to – it appeared to us it was going to go out of bounds at the 2 or 3 yard line. Gosh, take it on the 35. He catches the ball at the sideline, which was a difficult – because he could have stepped out of bounds, right? That was a difficult place to even field the ball. What if you step out at the 1 yard line and, oh, by the way, you only return it to the 20?
No, I'm going to tell you what I think about that. I think Trent's padding his stats. For each of the last several weeks, you know, we've gone back and looked at the stats. And I just scratched my head. Wow, Trent had 170 all-purpose yards. Trent had 150 all-purpose yards. He had almost 200 all-purpose yards. Where did he get those? And it became glaringly obvious to me in the South Carolina game that he had 4 or 5 kickoff returns that he ran out of the end zone to the 20. Well, we're going to get 20 yards if he just takes a knee and it's done. But if he runs them out to the 20, that's 100 yards. That's 80 or 100 yards. And so you go back and look and say, wow.
Easy to get 200 then.
Yeah, Trent had almost X whatever crazy number of yards. And
right.
He's like getting these gift yards. And it's almost like he went over to Mays and said, here's a way to get some free yards. And so Mays did it. And then Mays fumbled the ball. And it's like, come on, guys. This neat, that's a little jokey kind of thing that you're doing, but let's stop it. If we're going to get the ball in a 20, let's get the ball in a 20. Let's not risk injury, and let's certainly not risk the ball.
I hope so. I just hope Saban and them coached that up this week, because not only could he have had it on the 35, but he also could have gone out at the 1, and now you give them the ball on the 1. You know, one other quick thing as far as special teams go, do you think we're flipping the field position? I mean, Ole Miss didn't show a whole lot in this game, and so therefore the field position was already to our favor because they had so many 3-and-outs. But do you think that we're really winning the field position battle with our special teams the way we've used to in the past?
I really don't. I think that we have some quality folks that are playing the position, but I don't think we're flipping the field position like we did last year. Javi's a special player. We're not just going to be able to roll someone out and replace them. Javi was a very special player, invigorated the crowd when he went out there. The crowd, you know, Javi, and there was a couple times where this would have been the right moment to get some momentum, and then Mays is out there. And there's no one cheering Mays because he's not that personality. He's not that kind of star player at that position. And it's nothing against Mays, and I actually hope he takes over the job from Julio, you know, kind of subbing for injury. I hope he gets the job full time, but he's just not Javi, and he's just not that special talent. I just think you get one of those every few years. We just don't have that talent right now. The one last thing that I want to comment on special teams, and we're seeing it all on SportsCenter last night and this morning, but Alex Watkins, a player that hasn't really contributed in his time on campus, but he did a fantastic crackback of block on Mays's long run and really took out two guys. He's got around the shoulder, so it wasn't a clip or block in the back, but he just bowled over two guys that really allowed Mays to get the corner and run up the sideline for his long return. So I just want to give a shout out to Alex Watkins there.
Absolutely, that was probably the first hit we've seen him do in his career, but we're glad it came on the punt return.
Absolutely, Tom. If we switch gears a little bit and talk about our game balls, who are you giving your game ball to this week?
You know, I think my game ball has to be Marquise Mays. Julio, you know, Coach Saban said Julio could have come back in the game, but they kept him out just to be safe in the first half. We needed some guys to step up and take that role. Marquise Mays, you know, had three or four catches for 50 yards, but then he had those punt return yards that we talked about earlier. I mean, Marquise Mays had 170 all-purpose yards in the game. And we, you know, our three-headed, you know, Julio, Mark Ingram, and Trent Richardson normally is getting us that 500. Marquise Mays filled the role of one of those three-headed monsters last night.
Yeah, he definitely contributed and I thought had a very good game. I'm giving my mini-game ball to Dre Kirkpatrick. He had seven tackles. He broke up a pass. I thought he had a very good day. And he actually at one point went down with injury and was just writhing in pain.
We thought it was a shoulder.
Flailing his legs. And, yeah, I actually thought maybe it separated his shoulder, the degree of pain and discomfort. But then it subsided. He got up. He walked. He was holding his arm gingerly. Maybe at that point it kind of looked like a stinger. Couldn't really tell. But within just a couple of plays, he was back in the game and contributing. So looks like he's going to be okay, probably just a stinger. But I thought overall he played with some physicality. And I think his contributions assisted in the win last night.
I think that's a good call.
Tom, what's your big takeaway if we stepping away from the Ole Miss game now? What do you leave this game with?
I can't wait to see us put a whole game together. This game could have been much different in the first half. The whole foot on your throat, take away their will, make their ass quit, as Coach Saban likes to say. We should have made their ass quit. And unfortunately, we let them stay in the game because they had some missed opportunities as well. But the way the defense played so well at the beginning of this game and what they were able to do, you know, to make Ole Miss punt every single time in the first half, except for that field goal that the defense stiffened and saved it when they got the ball at the 20-yard line. If the offense would have played as well as the defense in the first half, it would have been a much different game than a ho-hum, you know, final score of 23-10.
Right. No, I agree. And it's I like the coaching mantra, especially when you can use it to positive effect, that we have our best football still in us. So I'm hopeful that we can see that. I think that we're going to be a different team after the bye. So, you know, we'll see how that comes together. I think down the home stretch, I think we'll have – we'll be a strong team and we'll play well. Tom, I'm going to take my takeaway off the field and get your reaction to some fan experience and particularly the experience that we had with the fan behind us. He seemed to be a one-trick pony, and all night long he was yelling in what I thought was a very bad Jersey accent. Give the ball to the Heisman Trophy winner. It's as simple as that. Give the ball to the Heisman Trophy winner. Why are we not doing that? And then, of course, we gave the ball to Mark at one point and ran the ball up the middle for about 2 yards. And he complained, you know, why are you running the ball up the middle? It's so predictable. And so he gets what he wants and kind of an obnoxious fan. Almost turned and said something to him a couple times. What was your thoughts? What are your reactions?
That's one of those fans that's their first football game that they've ever been to in person. And, you know, they're just caught up in the moment. That's the typical... You know, that's one of those frustrating reactions that from the fans' perspective, and, you know, you wonder if more people don't think that way, you know, about the team, because we've called for more running from the team. But when you have a back like Trent, you got to break it up between the two of them. He's just not even acknowledging the fact that keeping those two guys fresh and having those two as weapons is such a big plus for this team.
Yeah, he would say give it to Mark when Trent was in the game, and then when Trent would, you know, have a good run, he'd say, well, then give it to that other guy, whoever he is. And so you could tell that he was there. He and his wife were there with another couple, and he was trying to show out like how much football he knew, and it was clearly it wasn't much. And there was a growing group around us that I think were getting annoyed. And so it is funny. You can tell people when they don't get the games very often and don't know the personnel, which that's fine, but they apparently sometimes don't know the game either. So I find that to be a little bit interesting.
That was humorous.
If I can do another takeaway, I have proof positive that my wife Alicia is listening to the podcasts.
Why is that?
Well, we were sitting enjoying a nice little television episode last night or earlier this week, and out of the blue, she hits the pause button on the TiVo and turns and says, The sizzling hot Aaron Andrews. What's that all about? So I guess
it's good to know she's listening.
Well, it is good to know that she's listening. And
your trick worked. You were doing that just specifically to hear if she was listening.
Well, I'm just thinking apparently she didn't like my analysis.
You don't think so?
Well,
you were just calling it like you see it.
You know, adding some color to our list for our listeners. It's a role I play on air. All right, why don't we get serious just for another minute and talk about next week. The Tide travels to Tennessee to play the Volunteers. What do you see for this game?
You know, Tennessee, I think I heard or read something the other day that during the two coaching transitions now, you know, between Fulmer and Kiffin, that they've had 32 players that they've lost, you know, from a depth standpoint. So this is a very different Tennessee talent team than we've seen in years past. You know, but they're going to play hard. You know, they've got a good young coach. It'll be a difficult, it's always a difficult place to play in Knoxville. We got to come out fast. You know, the offense has got to come out like the defense did for us to take their will away. This is another one of those opponents that you could get them on their heels quickly, and they're just going to give up. I mean, I guess this team's not going to give up with the MO of this coach, but it's like this can be a very different game. This game needs to start out like we wanted the game against Ole Miss.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that this team does, and talking about Tennessee, I think they have given up in the second half of a couple of games. They were tied or leading Oregon at half and just got the doors blown off of them. And even Coach Dooley talked about, you know, the effort just wasn't there, and they apparently gave up. But talking about the Tide, I think we're a team very similar to last year at this point in the season. You know, 7 weeks in, we've got this eighth game. I think we're a little bit running on fumes. And I think that, to your point, we need to come out and we need to strike a blow early. We need to change their mind early. We need to get them to try to quit
sooner,
early, and not hang around in the game. Let's get the game over with. And then if we have, you know, two and a half quarters of just boring back and forth football, I'm okay if we've jumped up to a 14-17, you know, 20-point lead. And I think we need to do that early. I think that we will not run up the score on Dooley. He coached for Coach Saban for quite a number of years, a couple of different stops. So I think there will be a respect factor similar to what we saw against Penn State and Coach Paterno. And so I'm netting at a, if we can jump out early, I'm seeing a 24-7, 24-10 type ball game, but the game itself not really being that close.
You know, I see this offense. I agree with what you're saying as far as him wanting to show respect to one of, you know, his young coaches. But by the same token, this offense has got to get on track. And the lull that we saw with this football team last year in the middle of the year, we've got to go ahead and really try to work on that. And so I'm looking for this team to put 30 points on the board because they need to. They've got to get their self on track. And so I'm hoping for something like a 31 or 34-10 type of ball game. You know, I think they're going to get a touchdown. They might get a couple field goals, but I'm hoping for at least a, you know, 30 points from our offense.
All right. We'll have to tune in next week to the game next Saturday evening and see how that plays out. I think we both agree that the Tide will roll, and rolling right into the bye week. Like I said earlier, I think we're going to be a different team coming out of the bye. Coach Saban is going to be super pumped up to go back to Baton Rouge and play LSU coming out of the bye. So I think we're a different team on the last third of the season coming out of the bye. So certainly something to look forward to, but let's not overlook the Vols in the meantime. It's been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast, the only podcast giving away BCS championship tickets. Thanks, and roll Tide.
Thank you for tuning in to the Alabama Football Podcast, the only Alabama podcast giving away BCS championship tickets. For more, find us on Facebook under Alabama Football Podcast.
Aye.
Visit us on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com.
Aye.
Email at alabamafootballpodcast@gmail.com.
Aye.
And don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes.
Aye.
Blow the horn. Let's go.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
He fumbled and Alabama has free covers.
I told you what they were going to do.
Touchdown, Alabama.
It's 13 national championships.
Roll Tide.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Nothing they forgot to play against and make his ass quit. That's our trademark. That's our M.O. with the team.
Daniel Moore, get your canvas ready.
Because we come, LSU.
All right.